In this episode of the Executive Podcast, we speak to Fiona McIntosh, the founder of More Than Motivation. More Than Motivation provides high-quality leadership training, motivational development, and coaching for individuals and businesses. Based in Caithness, Fiona launched her business after working with a care team for her disabled son, where she was introduced to a tool called Motivational Maps. It helps people understand what not only motivates them, but those around them. She now helps other businesses and organisations to make sure they have the right team members in the right places. We speak to Fiona about why it's important to know what motivates people, how this can help businesses, and what it's like to be a businesswoman, mother, and also live on a busy farm. So Fiona, welcome to the Executive Podcast. Thanks for coming here today. So I guess, you know, we're going to talk about business and your lessons with More Than Motivation and just a little bit about your challenges and successes along the way. But I want to kind of take you back a bit first and ask you, what was your first job and what were you like as an employee?
Oh my goodness. Well, I suppose even when I was in school, I had that Saturday job that a lot of us have had. And that was in the little rural post office / shop in the community that I was brought up in Forth in Caithness, just along the road from Dunray. And what was I like as an employee? Oh my goodness. As a teenager, probably a nightmare.
I think we've all been like that as a teenager. And where did you go from there then? That was a kind of Saturday job. What was then your first kind of full-time job?
So my first full-time job was working in a solicitor's office doing admin. And I was there for about a year, but it really wasn't for me. It just wasn't challenging enough. There wasn't, and I wasn't really working with people as well. I think that's quite a big thing for me. So it was my first job, but it certainly wasn't my favourite job.
And then you've spent quite a few years working at UHI. Is that right? As a lecturer, what was that like? What did you enjoy about being a lecturer?
Yeah, so, well, I went back to college after my son was born myself and was there initially as a student. And then towards my end of my student term, I was asked to do, I think it was some evening classes. And that's basically how I ended up teaching at the college. I started just by doing the odd evening class. And then by the next year, I was doing loads of hours. Absolutely loved working for the college. Loved the interaction with the students. Loved trying to come up with innovative ways to help them learn, and just loved the people, really. So that was a great job. And I was there for 18 years before I finally threw the towel in. My son wasn't very well, and it didn't look like he was going to get better at the time. Handed in my notice because I needed to be at home with him.
And I guess then, how was that process for you? You know you needed to be there for your son, but then having maybe to then let go of a part of you where you're working, you know, part of your identity. How was that process of letting that go?
I think once I made the decision, that was okay. But prior to that, I probably should have made the decision earlier. But yeah, I didn't want to let it go. As I say, I love the teaching aspect. I mean, there was lots of bits of it that I didn't love, but you know, the student aspect of it, I did love. I think that for me, when I eventually made the decision that I was going, it was actually a bit of a relief because it was, I mean, it was a full-time role, but it was more than a full-time role, as lots of people in education will tell you. It may be a 9-to-5 job, but it's not a 9-to-5 job. So you're spending every hour of the day preparing stuff, marking stuff, that kind of thing. So relief once I made the decision, I think.
And I guess that is, I mean, just going to sidetrack here a little bit, but I guess when looking at decisions, sometimes that's the worst part is before we make them. But actually when we make them, there seems to be that relief. Have you found that maybe just throughout your life that that is kind of the thing?
I'm quite intuitive, so I'm usually pretty good at just knowing with my gut what I need to do. But yeah, I think you're right that sometimes the, you know, leading up to that is the difficult bit. And then once you make the decision, it's all good and you just go for it.
So talking about going for it, what made you decide to start More Than Motivation?
So a couple of years after Leaving the college, my son actually got better, which we didn't expect. When I left the college, he really was not very well, and we didn't think he was going to get better. But he did get better, thankfully, which was great. And I found myself just a little bit lost, I suppose. He was going out and about with his carers, doing all the things that they used to do. And I was like, ooh, what am I going to do now? I was missing people, missing the challenge, missing work colleagues. And, you know, just missing making a difference, doing things to help other people. That's where it started from. And as I said, my son, he's severely disabled. And we have a care team. And I was introduced to a tool called Motivational Maps through somebody that came to work with our care team. And I was so impressed with that tool that I trained in actually being a practitioner. And that was the first thing that More Than Motivation offered.
So what does that look like? What do those motivational worksheets look like? How does that work?
So Motivational Maps, it's a self-perception inventory, really. It's an online tool that somebody can sit. It takes about 10 or 15 minutes to complete, and they get their results back from that. And then I use that either as part of my coaching process to help somebody who's maybe a bit stuck, or as part of team development. So there are 9 motivators. We all have all of them. It's just that we have them in a different order, different levels of intensity. And it's about helping us understand ourselves and other people in terms of what actually drives us to get out of bed in the morning. And lots of people actually don't know what it is. And it's only once you start having the conversation with them about their map, they're like, oh yeah, that is me. And it just, from a team perspective, it just helps the leader understand the individuals in their team better. We're not all driven by the same things. As an individual, what drives me, I would be inclined to use language around that. So it's about helping the leader be able to use language that fits the people in their team better. And it's also a measure in terms of how motivated people are feeling. So if motivation levels are low, what can we do to boost that? How can we help them feel more motivated?
And, you know, you said there's 9 motivators there. What are those? Mm-hmm. Are they little things? Or are they kind of big things? What are they?
Well, the obvious one that people might think about would be a motivator called Builder, which is the money motivator. It's the one that's all about material satisfaction. But actually, it's a motivator that we don't, you know, I don't, in my experience, I haven't seen it as a predominant motivator for lots of people. So the lesson from that for employers is that actually money, whilst it's important, because it is important to everybody, it's maybe not the most important thing to the people in their organisations. And then we have the Searcher motivator, which is one that I associate with, which is all about meaning and purpose. It's about making a difference. It's about helping people. And that probably for me is the one that I see most, certainly in professional organisations, it's the one that I see the most of. And then as another example, we might have friend. And the friend motivator, it's not about whether you're friendly or not. It's about belonging. So it's about being part of the team. It's about collaboration. It's about feeling that you belong somewhere. And for some people, that's a real driver. And for other people, it isn't. So yeah, there's, as I say, there's 9 of them. That's 3 to give you a sample.
No, and I think that's so incredible to know, because I think sometimes that is, we think we're just driven by money, or what is the salary on a job at the end of the day? But actually, you can be paid heaps and still not necessarily enjoy your job. So I guess that's quite a helpful tool for both employers and employees.
Yes, and if I think about it from our care team perspective, for example, if we are looking at recruiting people and we've got somebody who, you know, that searcher motivator that I talked about, that meaning and purpose, if that's their lowest motivator, then probably care is not for them. You know, so it just gives that little bit of insight. And then there's also looking at it from a team perspective, what's missing in the team, or where might there be clashes? Because if I'm highly driven by meaning and purpose, but the person that I'm working with is highly driven by money, then there's potential there for there to be a bit of a clash. But likewise, the other side of that is that if I'm highly driven by that meaning and purpose, who's taking care of the money if there isn't somebody who has got that somewhere in their profile? So lots of things to look at.
No, I think it's really enlightening, actually. And I guess then, does that then help employers decide what maybe people do in the team? Or, you know, if you're going to excel at this because you're a researcher, then this would be a great project for you. But if you're more of a money or builder driven person, then this other project is better for you. Does it help employers maybe more to navigate what their staff do?
Yeah, and it would certainly be something that I would, you know, like say in terms of appraisal, the appraisal process, in terms of, right, okay, what development does this person want? Or, you know, where is the next steps for them? Yeah, definitely a great tool for that.
Sounds very quite exciting. And is it kind of like, you know, like you do the Enneagrams or, you know, the Myers-Briggs stuff? Is it kind of all based around that, or is it something completely different?
It's interesting that you say that, because the Enneagram is one of the things that it's based on, but also Maslow's hierarchy of needs and Eggershine's career anchors. But a lot of these tests that you do are based around personality. And personality, you know, deals with fixed traits. It gives us a snapshot of who we are, and, you know, it doesn't really change. But with motivation, it does change, because we're looking at states which changes. And so the motivational map gives us what it is that drives us, what it is that makes us want to get out of bed in the morning to go to work, and how motivated we are. And that affects things like, you know, our energy, our health, and needs to be monitored and boosted.
Oh, definitely. I guess it's all about what puts that fire in our belly, isn't it?
Exactly.
Which we all need. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it, exactly. Yeah.
No, that's great. And I guess looking at what you do, I mean, part of that as well is looking at leadership training, or what is a leader? And I think one of the questions I wanted to ask you was, well, what is a leader? What does that look like?
Okay, so a leader for me is, you know, it's about more than management. Management is about being able to say, right, this is what we're doing, and that kind of thing. A leader is somebody who actually cares about and wants to improve their people. So it's about developing the people that are working for them. And a leader is about, you know, having vision and being able to actually direct and lead people through that vision and get them working towards that. And it's about developing people. You know, when somebody new comes in the door, there's going to be an element of direction. You know, it's going to, you know, this is what you need to do. And it's about being able to give explicit instructions and being able to give feedback, but bearing in mind, you know, that it's behavior that we're looking at, it's not the person. So positive regard, genuineness, those kind of things. And then following a process that then takes us at the other end to actually having people who can get on with the job with responsible initiative. So actually be able to pick up and run with something and make decisions that are sound as well. So, and then there's, you know, the process in between. So for me, it's very much, I deliver liberating leadership, and it is based on a lot of leadership theory, but it makes it a very practical process in terms of how you go about that, with a set of competencies that runs with that.
Unlock exclusive content from all our newspaper titles with the Highland News and Media Digital Plus subscription. Get access to news in your area online through e-edition, or take the headlines on the go with our user-friendly app. With news at your fingertips, wherever life takes you, all this for £49.88 a year. Subscribe now at hnmmedia.co.uk to stay informed, connected, and engaged with Digital Plus.
Can you have leaders that are not necessarily maybe in management or positions, but maybe you've got people within the organisation that maybe you've got other staff members that are attracted to, and they kind of lead on elements without necessarily having that position?
Absolutely. I think there are people who are just natural leaders that people will, as you say, you know, naturally follow along with or go with. But anybody, no matter what their personality is, can learn to be a highly effective leader. And it's about looking at the skills and competencies that highly effective leaders use and learning those and then being able to apply them.
So I guess then you are the leader of More Than Motivation. You're the person steering that. How have you learned to do that? Is that skills you've picked up throughout your career? Obviously, you know, the stuff you've had to do for your son with the care team, that's all tools you've picked up along the way. How have you managed to do this?
Oh, it's been a journey. that is not the case, for sure. But I think I've got lots of experience from my teenage years. I was involved with the local young farmers group and did lots of things around public speaking. I took on roles within that organisation and took part in, at that time they had something called the Clydesdale Bank Leadership Programme, took part in that. Once I got married, then I got involved with the local Royal Air Force Air Cadet organisation. So I've been involved with that since I was 20, so we'll not say how many years that is. And I'm trying to think how long now, I've been the squadron commander for the Thurso Squadron. So lots of leadership involved in that. And that's a wee bit more tricky, because in that one you are leading volunteers and youngsters. So there is no, you know, they can walk out the door and there's no consequence, if you like, for them. So that's a little bit more challenging. So that, you know, I've learned a lot from that. And then I think through the college, just leading students in the classroom and other colleagues, new colleagues that come in. So all those kind of things. And then it kind of, after I launched More Than Motivation, I was introduced to the Liberating Leadership Programme. And I actually went on that myself to see what it was about and experience it. And recognised what a valuable course it was and some of the really useful stuff that came out of it for me to implement, even with our care team or just with people generally. Some really good stuff in there.
Amazing. So you've done lots of learning, I guess, around it. Oh, so much learning, yeah. And another element, you know, you look at within your business is well-being. And I guess that's kind of a term that is maybe thrown about a lot more now than it used to be. I guess it's a term that we didn't maybe even used to use. But what does well-being mean? What does that look like?
Well, from my perspective, when I'm working with an organisation, it is the holistic approach. So what I'm not doing is going in and delivering, you know, mental health first aid or something like that. What I try to do with organisations is to get them to look at, for their organisation, what does good health, mental health and well-being look like? And that's going to be different for every organisation, you know. So what is it that they're trying to achieve and what behaviours do they want to change is really the baseline for that. And then it's working with the organisation to create a structure that's going to support that. So rather than just diving into the latest fad that's going along, that they're actually thinking about what is right for their organisation and spending their money wisely rather than, you know, just the, you know, what is the next thing. So is it going to be right for them? Is it going to be right for their people? And making sure that they've got structures in place to support their people at whatever stage they are. Because we all have, you know, we all have mental health and that's a continuum. And, you know, sometimes we're in a good place and sometimes we're in not such a good place. And that's, you know, for all of us. So what I often say to employers is, if it was your son or daughter or wife or husband, whatever, and they were struggling, what would you want their employer to do for them? Or how would you want their employer to treat them on that journey? And that's kind of what is it that we're wanting to achieve.
I love that. That's a really reflective question for people as well, isn't it? And makes it really quite relatable when it comes to making big decisions like that. And I mean, you look like you're busy, and it sounds like you're very busy looking after lots of other people's health and well-being. And what does your, how do you look after your own well-being? You've got a farm as well, you know, you're doing exams, you're a mother, you've got a business. How do you look after yourself?
I suppose there's a couple of things. For me, the croft and the animals is a big part of that. So yes, there are days when it's lashing rain and there's frost on the ground and there's some sheep running around that you're trying to catch because she's in the middle of lambing and you can't care. It's very frustrating. But the majority of the time working with the animals, you know, that's a big thing for me in terms of my well-being. You know, when you catch that yow and you pull a live lamb out and you've, you know, brought new life into the world, that's a massive thing. I also have dogs here, so my dogs is a very big part of me and just having fun with them. You know, that's, that always takes your mind off of whatever else is going on. And, you know, the odd treat, maybe a visit to the country spa in Leibster. so that I can get a bit of pampering. I like doing that as well. So, yeah, it's just making sure that you're taking a little bit of time for yourself and not just focusing on everything else that needs to be done.
I think we all need me time, don't we? And country spa sounds beautiful. I think I would prefer that to pulling the sheep out, but, you know. I guess, what has been the most challenging thing then since you've set up your own business? Because where you are is quite rural for what you do. But I mean, what has been the biggest challenge?
I suppose the biggest challenge for me has been being on your own. So as I said, I really enjoyed, you know, in the college working with my colleagues and, you know, you would bounce ideas off of each other. And, you know, have somebody else to sound off of when things were frustrating. So I guess that's the biggest challenge, is actually just being you. And I think for me, the thing that I did that helped with that was I got involved with a business network group. And that has given me other people who are in similar situations that you can get in touch with, get in contact with if there's something that you're, you know, you're maybe wanting to sound off with somebody else or whatnot. And so that's been the solution for me.
Creating that community around you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I guess, what's one thing you wish you'd known before you'd started your business, or is there anything?
I suppose the one thing that I wish I had realised sooner is that for the likes of Liberating Leadership, I probably targeted my marketing around bigger organisations, thinking, you know, leadership structure, that type of thing. And I think it took me a wee while to realise the community we live in is built on lots of small businesses. That probably is where I should have targeted initially. So I think that would probably be the learning for me. And the, you know, the Liberating Leadership, actually, when I thought about that and thought about the small businesses, I was like, do you know, Fiona, that was the most obvious thing, because there are loads of small business owners who start out on their own and end up employing people with no leadership experience whatsoever. And how do they know what to do or how to get the best out of their people?
No, that's great. And I guess, what would be your three pieces of advice to someone who was going to start a business of their own?
The first one is easy. Just do it. I would say, yeah, just do it. Just do it would be my first one. What other pieces of advice would there be? To find yourself a network, find a tribe that you can have that conversations with. You know, as I say, whether it's bouncing ideas or sounding somebody out about something. I think that's really important. Number three, being brave, I think, to put yourself out there. That's something I definitely struggled with initially, is that kind of sales aspect, putting yourself out there. I was, not very comfortable with that at all. So I think just, go for it. Get your name out there and be your business. Be the face of your business and put yourself out there. There you go.
That's all really helpful. And I guess my last question for you then is, if you could go back to your 20-year-old self who just maybe joined the cadets, what would you say to yourself now? What would be the piece of advice or the mantra you would give your 20-year-old self from where what you've learned now and where you are now?
Oh, gee, difficult question. The advice I would probably give myself is, believe in yourself. Stop doubting yourself. you do know what you're doing, you know, you've learned this or you've experienced that, actually believe it. And, you know, you are just as good as the next person.
That's beautiful. I love that. And I think we all need to know that. So thank you so much for your time there, Fiona.
You're welcome.
It's been really appreciated and hopefully not as scary as you thought it was going to be. So no, that was fantastic. Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Executive Podcast. You can sign up to our free newsletter at hnmedia.co.uk/executive magazine. We partner with stakeholders to keep you up to date with everything that is happening across all sectors within the North of Scotland economy.